Men's basketball has been able to string a few wins together following a tightly contested Christmas stretch. Records were broken in track and field, and do the Lady Bulldogs have another shot at a championship under head coach Drew Olsen? We'll break it all down for you today on the third episode of Talkin' Dogs. I'm Cohen Carpenter here with Kai Ulbrich. Kai, how you doing today?
I'm doing well, Cohen. Glad to be back with you at the desk.
Good break. A lot of action happened over the break. I guess let's just get started. Track and field, seems like it was pretty eventful. What you got for us?
Yeah, so we've got the Bulldog Early Bird Classic. So the only meet that they've had so far this year technically was an overwinter break, but we're going to cover it anyway. It's because there were lots of notable performances from the Bulldogs. So first one that comes to mind, sophomore Haley Miles broke the school record in the long jump with a jump of 19 feet, 4 1/4 inches. And what's even crazier is second place in that event was over 2 feet away from her. It was also a meet record and an NAIA auto qualifier. So she qualified for nationals already, and there were also 19 other Bulldogs who potentially punched a ticket to nationals. So nationals in track and field is a little bit different than other sports. So, you know, in soccer or football or basketball, you make it as a team. You know, you win your tournament, you win your league, then you get to go to the national tournament. In track and field, it's a little bit different. So they have these things called A and B qualifying standards. And basically that means you qualified, but how many people in your event can your coach take? So the A standard is gonna be the tougher one to get. And if an athlete gets the A standard, they're pretty much in. If a coach has 3 athletes who all meet the A standard, he can take all 3 of them in the same event.
Gotcha.
If they have the B standard, which is still a quite impressive feat to achieve, not easy to do, but let's say the coach has 3 athletes who all make the B standard in the 400 meters, he can only take one of them. So he'll take his fastest athlete, and then he can have one in reserve in case of an injury or some illness to one of his other athletes. So the A standard is the hardest one to get. It means you can take pretty much as many athletes in that event as you want. B standard, you're pretty set on going to nationals, but if you want that guarantee, you need to get the A standard. We had, like I said, 19 athletes who met either the A or the B standard. So we'll get it started with sophomore Adriana Rodenkahl, who ran an 8.65 in the 60 meter hurdles to punch her ticket to nationals. She got second in the race, but she broke the meet record along with the winner. So she doesn't technically hold the meet record right now, but she broke the previous one along with the winner of the event. Also set the meet record in the 60 meter dash with a 7.85. Junior Jenna Esch ran a 57.64 in the 400 meters and set the meet record and also qualified for nationals in the 600 meter dash with a 1:36.35. And then her teammate, junior Jordan Kopke, was right behind her in the 600 with a 1:36.73. So they took 1 and 2, and very close race between the two of them. Esch just got the edge on Jordan. Next up, junior Riley Hager ran a 3:01 flat in the 1,000 meters. She earned herself first place in the race and also got the national qualifying standard. First freshman on the list, Zoe Walker, also with a meet record and auto qualifying in the high jump with 5 feet and 6 inches. Junior Joel Rothy got third in the men's long jump with a 23'6¾" jump, was also a qualifier for nationals. And then junior Zach Zoner, very notable performance. He got first place in the meet in men's pole vault with 16'7¼". So that's an auto qualifying spot. And what's even crazier, as of the recording of this episode, he leads the nation.
How about that?
Yeah, so he is first out of everyone in the NAIA in the men's pole vault. And then you move on to the women's pole vault, where it's arguably even crazier. 3 auto qualifiers, all with the same height. So we had senior Josie Pools and juniors Amira Cummings and Sydney Reacher, who all achieved a height of 11'8½". They ended up getting 3 successive placements, And the way that they break ties in pole vault is basically whichever one of them cleared 11 feet, 8.5 inches, in the least amount of tries gets the higher placement. If it's still tied after that, they look at the rest of the competition as a whole and see how many misses each of them had leading up to it. So in pole vault, you can opt into the event at any point you want. So you can start going at the lowest height, or you could wait till it gets to 15 feet and then try. It kind of favors, in a way, the athletes who are better at the higher heights and don't have to enter quite as fast, because they might have less misses than the other people. So Pools ended up beating out Amira and Sydney for those placements, but all of them got a qualifying spot. Then our first thrower, junior Abigail Gerber, got second in her event with a throw of 45 feet and 9 inches, was an auto qualifier for nationals.
Shot put?
Yes, shot put. And then women's weight throw had three qualifiers. Junior Abby Wolgemuth placed first with a 58 foot 10 and a quarter inch throw. Gerber took fifth place in the event with 53 feet 10 and a half inches, so same person as who got second in the shot put. And then junior Cameron Pokerny was right behind in sixth place with 53 feet 7 and a quarter inches. So all of them achieved the national standard. And then senior Chris Wren took first place in the men's weight throw with a 64 feet 5 inch effort. He was also an auto qualifier. And then the first relay, the women's 4x4, rounds out the auto qualifiers. They took first place in their event with a 3 minute 57.82 second race. It was made up of Jenna Esch, Kayla Kirchner, Trinity Tolles, and Jordan Kopke. One notable non-national qualifier, senior Julie McIntyre, took first place and set the meet record in the 3,000 meter run with a 10:26.3. And then these guys also didn't get the auto qualifier, but they're leading the NAIA in the distance medley. Trey Robertson, Colby Sugden, Trevor Kunkel, and Calvin Rode ran 10:24.58. So with the distance medley, not a ton of teams run it early on in the year. They're more focused on their individual events. So we'll see what happens with their first place in the country as more teams start filtering into the standings. But as of now, they're in first place, so pretty cool for those guys. And then sophomore Josie Noble took first place in the women's triple jump with a 37 foot 5 and a quarter inches, also set the meet record. And that's it for notable performances at the early bird meet, but there's lots of track and field action in the coming weeks that we will be here to cover.
So track and field, it's obviously a lot of names, a lot of stats. You know, that's kind of indicative of the sport, and sometimes that can be a lot to take in. But just obviously you've gone through it all, and I know you have some friends on the track and field team. So just for the layman, compare where you think our track and field team stands, maybe in comparison to other GPAC schools. Do you think we have one of the better track and field teams?
Yeah, I mean, GPAC's always super solid for track and field. I mean, I was looking at the national standings for a bunch of different events. A lot of them happened at that meet. So GPAC's a very competitive conference, but as of right now, we're looking pretty good.
I think we've got
a pretty decent shot of making it in a pretty good spot at nationals. And of course, it's only going to get better. We have 20 qualifiers in the first race. I can only imagine how many more we're going to get in the coming weeks.
For sure.
Well, I'm going to throw it over to you for men's and women's basketball.
So men's and women's basketball, I'm kind of going to start from the beginning here because we haven't shouted them out on the podcast yet. Obviously, a lot of action happened over Christmas, but even more action happened before Christmas. So let's start with men's basketball. It's been a bit up and down, bit topsy turvy. They've ebbed and they've flowed. Right now they're sitting at a 11-4 record, which is nice, but three out of their four losses are conference losses. So their conference record only 6-3, which, you know, could stand to be a little bit better. Currently they're on a 2-game winning streak though. It was a lot worse about a week ago when they were at 4-3 in conference play, but then they rattled off wins, I want to say, against Doan and Briarcliff. Pretty easy victories, so now they're at a better 6-3. The season opened, it was pretty exciting. They were receiving national votes, but nothing solid, and then they beat ranked Mayville State in the Cattle Classic, if you will remember. That's been a while ago, but They started their victory with a win over a ranked opponent. Good win streak in there, had a few ups and downs. It was really, really indicative. One stretch that was really indicative of the guys' season, at least, was over the break. A lot of us were at home. Maybe we weren't paying attention to the box scores, maybe paying attention to NFL football or NBA basketball, whatever you do over the break. But December 9th through December 18th, we had two overtime wins and a loss of 1 point. So the loss was wedged in between the two wins there. The two overtime wins, one was against Briarcliff, again making it an overtime. We lost by 4, 86-82. And then we had a 1 point loss to San Fran State. And then we came back in another overtime win for 108-103 against Olivet Nazarene. Yeah. So we had to make sure the guys were, and the fans of the guys were stocked up on their heart medication, because that can be pretty stressful.
Yeah, but you know, those overtime wins always feel the best. Even though it's nice to get an easy game once in a while, it's always those tight ones that are the most fun afterwards.
Yeah, tight, but I guess they make the post game a lot more exciting. Say that. But after that, there was a little bit of smooth sailing. They had a four-game GPAC win streak. Unfortunately, January 3rd, the first game in 2024, that win streak was snapped by Jamestown. Again, the record's still nice enough, 11-4. Kind of getting more specific, looking at the team, it's really a two-headed monster. You've got Noah Shutt and Tristan Smith, and they're going to kind of exchange stats here. Noah Shutt is going to be leading the team in points, 22. He's having one of his better seasons after having a great season last year, and he's going to be second in the team in rebounds with 126 total. Tristan Smith, so that's number 12, then you go to number 22, add 10. Tristan Smith is second in points per game with 18, so only four behind Noah. Benny's first in rebounds, he has 10 more on the season. So Tristan and Noah are doing a great job really tying that team down. And currently, like I mentioned, they're on a two-game win streak, both against GPAC opponents. They have another game this Saturday, I want to say, in the afternoon. Obviously, weather permitting. I don't know if you've looked at the forecast, but it's going to be pretty cold.
Yeah, not nice. We're going to be in the negatives pretty much all this weekend. So.
And I think with wind chill, it's going to be negative 18 or something like that. And I believe we're playing Dort, and they come from up north, so they come down. Who knows what the road conditions will look like.
Yeah.
But either way, whether that game gets canceled, delayed, whatever, we're in the middle of conference season, so there's going to be a lot more conference games coming up, and we'll have a chance to improve that 6-3 record.
Yeah, regardless, we'll have to reschedule something, so hopefully it can just happen on Saturday. We can see what happens and then move on with it.
Yeah, and now on the other side of the court, we got women's basketball. Their record is a lot better in comparison. Well, not a lot better, but they've had a very illustrious season.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they started the season, so the season opened, obviously, the Cattle Classic, and they beat Sterling the first day. The second day, they play Marion University, who was ranked number 5 at the time, and they had a very impressive 10, it was close to a 10-point win over number 5 ranked, and after that, they were ranked at number 9 in the nation, in NAIA. They rattle off a few wins. They started the season with a 6-game win streak. I believe the 6th game of that 6-game win streak, that would have been Coach Drew Olson's 446th win as the head coach of the Concordia women's basketball program, which makes him the winningest coach in Concordia history. Not just women's basketball, but out of any program, any head coach, he has the most wins. Good for him. But it gets a bit rough. So after the 6-game win streak, they lose 2 out of their next 3. And watching these games, their first loss came to Jamestown at home. They win a game in between, and then they go to Briarcliff, and they lose that one, too. This is early December before we leave for break, and it's really the same story. You go out, and I interviewed Coach Olson about this after the game, if you want to read the article on the CUNY SOAR websites, but they go out, and they kind of fall flat in the first quarter. I believe in the Jamestown game specifically, there was something only like 12 points scored in the first half. They really came out flat. And they had a huge third quarter resurgence, mm-hmm. to the point where they had the lead back, but then they would lose by 10 against Jamestown, who is an opponent that isn't ranked, and that hurts a lot because that's a GPAC opponent, so you've got conference play mixed into the story. And it was really the same thing with Briarcliff. You had a very flat first half, you come back in the third quarter, you run up the scoreboard, we got the lead again, and then we choked it away in the fourth, and we ended up not getting that game. And I think that's kind of indicative when you look at the season. So just breaking down points by quarters, or periods, there's 4 of them, I'm calling them quarters. You got, in the first quarter, there's 265 points that we've scored on the season, which is our lowest In the second quarter, we have 274 points scored on the season, which is our lowest. Drew Olsen must be amazing at halftime speeches because in the third quarter, we have 356 points scored, which is by far our highest. And then in the fourth quarter, it's 280. So it's low, incrementally higher, super high, and then back to the same level of low. So obviously, whether that be coming out of the halftime, obviously we're better. It still hasn't. We were on a five-game win streak now following that loss to Briarcliff on December 9th. So we've able to come back from it, but I mean, if this trend continues, this is certainly going to be more problematic when you get into the closer games, when you start getting into ranked play, and especially when you get into playoffs, because that's when the conditioning really rears its ugly head, I think.
Oh, yeah. And just those stats are kind of crazy. You look at first, second, and fourth quarter, difference of 15 points between all those. Then you look at the third quarter, 76 points higher than the next highest quarter. So, like you said, Coach Olsen's halftime speeches must be something special.
It's something in the Gatorade, or who knows, man. But, I mean, maybe we've got a really nice locker room and the air is really refreshing. Who knows? But we come out, have a great third quarter. That's what's kept us in a lot of these games. And in a lot of these competitions, when we're playing competitions that maybe aren't as close against teams that, you know, we probably should blow out, the first quarter and the second quarter scoring is enough to get ahead that we really don't have to worry about it. But it is going to be, I think, well, it'll be interesting to watch when we play more ranked opponents.
I mean, they seem to be on the right track right now, like you said, with that five-game win streak. So, yeah, it'll be exciting to see what happens.
Yeah, and that boosts the record. It's 12-2 overall record. So, again, those two losses, it was we lose to Jamestown, we win a game in the middle, and then we lose to Briarcliff. So you take out that three-game stretch, and we don't have any losses. But it's unfortunate that those were conference play. We're 8-2 in conference play. Compared to the men's team, it's not really a two-headed monster. There's a lot of people who contribute, but the big name, if you go to Concordia and you're going to watch a game in person, the player that's going to stand out is Tayshia Rushton. She's the leading scorer on the team. She's averaging 15 points a game. She shoots the most threes on the team, and she's shooting well above 30%. I believe if she gets GPAC honors this season, it'll be her fourth season in a row with GPAC honors. So she's definitely the highlight of the team, but there's a lot of young talent around her. Another player to highlight is Kendall Brigham. She has the best three-point shot in the team. She's shooting 40.4% on the season. Yeah, crazy high. And she has the third or fourth most three-point attempts. I think when you watch a lot of women's basketball, you live and die. I mean, we're seeing this even at the higher levels. You know, you look at Iowa and Caitlin Clark and what they're doing up there. You live and die by the three-point.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's very much the same with our team. And you can tell in a lot of these close games that when the three isn't landing, a lot of the times the team is in pretty rough waters.
Yeah, I mean, you can't defend a good three-point shot. You can only defend so deep.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah.
If you have someone who can shoot it, you'll be in good shape. All right, who was the one who had that ankle breaker layup?
The one on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. I saw it on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of embarrassing to get. I mean, imagine being that defender and you get posted by an official team account.
Mm-hmm.
Like, come on, guys. But no, I
enjoyed watching.
I enjoyed watching it too. It added to the enjoyment a little bit. That was Tayshia.
Okay.
That was Tayshia. So yeah, and as you can see in that clip, she's shooting the most threes on the team. She's making them at a pretty good clip, but she can also drive. She's a little undersized compared to some of the girls that she may be playing on the court, but she's athleticism.
Clearly, it's no issue if she can just make them fall over.
More than makes up for it. But men and women's basketball and track and field were not the only sports being played over the break and before the break. Kai, you want to tell us about our wrestling team?
Yeah, so admittedly, me and Cohen aren't the biggest aficionados in the wrestling sphere, but we did our best to gather some information.
Googled the scoring rules before we started this episode.
Yeah, did a little bit covering wrestling in high school, but excited to get a little deeper dive into it in the coming weeks. So, looked at the stats from the Hastings Open over break, and we had some good performances. Mason Garcia was the highest performing Bulldog. He got second place in the 197 weight class bracket, where he pinned his way all the way to the final round and then was defeated by a 1-0 decision. So, very defensive match. You don't really see 1-0 decisions very often. Then Creighton Bauman, he placed third in the 141 weight class. So, he lost his first match of the day, but then moved his way through the consolation bracket to make it to the semifinals, where he then defeated Edric Norji from Dickinson State to claim himself third place. Same guy who beat him in the first round. So very nice for him to get that revenge on Norji. Some other notable performances, we got two fourth place finishes. One was Barrett Brandt, who placed fourth in the 165 weight class, and then Garrett Mosser with fourth in the 184 division. So, like I said, we're going to be taking a little deeper dive into wrestling in the coming weeks. Really excited to watch them as they enter the GPAC duels in the last week of January. On the 27th, they are going to face Northwestern on the first head-to-head. Then they got Briarcliff and Jamestown coming up. So look forward to some coverage of that in the coming weeks. They've also, on January 12th, versus Doan at Doan. So, like I said, we'll have some coverage of that as well. Really looking forward to the rest of the season. This is really just the start.
Yeah, it really is. And I think when you look at all of the sports teams in totality, obviously in some of our previous episodes, we're talking about the football team and the soccer teams had great success this year. And you look at the basketball teams and you look at the track and field especially, you look at the wrestling team. I mean, we've got a real chance to win all sports teams. You know, they hang those banners when you average out how every team finished in the GPAC, the best average, they get a banner to hang. I think we've won it a lot in recent years, and honestly, it's looking like we're going to win it again. We got a lot of solid teams out there. That'll be all for our third episode of Talking Dogs. Be sure to stay tuned in the future for weekly podcasts on the CUNY Sower website. I think we're going to try to be filming them Thursdays is what it sounds like. We're going to try to pump out one a week. In the meantime, from Cohen Carpenter and Kai Ulbruck and everyone at the Sower newspaper, have a great 2024 and go Dogs!